It's that time on the radio where we listen to Bill Blevins. How are we doing today, Bill?
Very well, thanks, Howard. I hope you are too.
Yes, thank you very much. Well, let's have a look this week at the importance of understanding tax residency. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about people planning to move here and what taxes they'd be liable for. However, we didn't actually look at when and how you become a tax resident. So can we do that today? So, Bill, to start with, how important is it to be clear on where you are a tax resident? And do you find that many people get it wrong? And could that prove costly?
Well, if you are a British expatriate, it is essential that you establish, without any shadow of a doubt, your tax residency for your various forms of income and capital appreciation, and understand how the UK rules apply to you. You might have settled outside of the UK into one of the continental European countries for a long time, but if you spend time in Britain every year or retain property there, as we, I think, discussed last week, Howard, you could still be seen as a UK resident. Now, that would make you liable for UK income, capital gains and inheritance taxes on your worldwide income and gains. And obviously, for many people relocating outside the UK, the object has been to avoid those charges. And it's not just those who have recently left the UK who are potentially affected. Even if you've lived outside of the UK for many, many years and believe that you're resident there, it is possible to come into the tax scope of HMRC, the Merchants Review and Customs. And it is important, if you want to avoid any unexpected tax bill or even a potential tax investigation, by taking care to understand the rules. Making a mistake in this area, it can be costly in tax terms, but frankly, if I'm honest, the last thing you want to do is to make an intentional or unintentional mistake and find yourself at the back end of a UK or a continental European tax investigation. They are life-changing events. They often last for as long as 2 or 3 years before they're settled. And at the end of the day, the bottomless pocket of money that the HMRC have is likely to exceed your ability to fund a defence of an investigation. So, yeah, a mistake can be costly in tax terms and also costly in life terms, as it were.
Yeah. So let's look at UK residence test. Can it affect UK nationals even when they've left the UK?
Yeah, of course, because if up until a little while ago, the definition of residence was left to a guidance booklet, and guidance booklets have always been notoriously suspect because they are simply there for guidance. And a very famous case by the name of Gaines Cooper, who clearly met all of the guidance notes, was found to be a UK resident because he regularly visited the UK right up to the limits of time then allowed, and eventually was found by what was then the Special Commissioners to be liable for a substantial amount of tax going back for many years, despite the fact that he had claimed non-domicile and non-resident status. The introduction of a statutory residence test now lays down in law quite how to calculate with some accuracy whether you are or are not a resident of the UK. Now, the law is fairly recent. There hasn't been any case precedent established in respect of the law. And so following the statutory residence test to the letter is very, very important. You don't want to be the first victim of a challenge that ends up being a case precedent, because most of those tend not to favour the taxpayer. So the process of the statutory residence test is used by HMRC to determine the individual's UK resident status for tax purposes. And so you can imagine they look very carefully and intensively at your circumstances to determine whether you are or are not a UK resident. Now, assessing your position as a non-UK resident under the new rules is not just about counting the days spent in the United Kingdom. You need to work through three tests in order to determine where you are resident. And in these tests, the references to the word years always means a UK tax year, that is to say from April to April. And the word day always starts at midnight, if you see what I mean. So these automatic overseas tests are important.
Yeah. Can you give us a brief summary then of how the UK residence test actually works?
This is a rather difficult one to answer in a short number of words because it's quite a complex test. There's an automatic oversee. You're treated as not resident in the UK if you meet any of these conditions. If you were not resident in any of the previous 3 years and spent less than 46 days in the UK in the current year. If you were UK resident in one or more of the previous 3 years but spent fewer than 16 days there in the current year. And if you worked overseas full time for at least 35 hours a week with no more than 30 days spent working in the UK, you are treated as not resident. The automatic residence test also deems you to be resident of the UK. This is, you are resident of the UK if you meet any of the following conditions. If you spend at least 183 days in the UK in the current year, I think most people understand that one. If you have your only or your main home in the UK, this is classed as a property that's available to you for 91 days or more that is actually used for at least 30 days. We sort of covered this one last week, how do we talked about the costs of owning a UK property and whether it could affect your resident status. If you work full time in the UK for at least 365 days without a break of 31 days or more, you are also going to be deemed to be resident. There's a sufficient ties test. This is to see how close your links are with the UK. It's to try and determine your connections. Is your family, spouse, and do you have any minor children living in the UK? Do you have accessible accommodation available to you for 91 days, more continuous days, that is? Even if you just spend a night there, just having it accessible for 90 days is one of the tests. Work, do you spend 40 or more days working in the UK? Not commonly from expatriates who have retired. Substantial visits, spending 90 days or more in the UK in either of the two previous tax years. Now, there's another test and there are some other fine detailed points to consider when you're trying to work out whether you comply as a resident of the UK under the statutory residence test. And without wasting time on our brief discussions this morning, Howard, if you go to the Blevins Ranked website and you contact the local office to you, the local partner or senior partner will have great pleasure in sending you a flow chart that is so simple to follow that will determine beyond doubt where you are, what are or not resident, so that you have some certainty that you're not breaching the rules simply because of ignorance.
Yeah.
I mean, no offence, but these are complex rules and they are easy to misunderstand. What it is essential to do is to go through that process in a constructive way by following this flowchart. And then if you are, because you can be tax resident in both jurisdictions, and if you are in any doubt whatsoever, the answer is then to speak to the local Blevins Ranked office and arrange to meet so that you can go through it with them, and they can there use their expertise to tell exactly what your position is.
Yeah, flowcharts don't really work on the radio, do they? Moving on to Spain then, Bill. What are the criteria that make you resident for tax purposes in Spain?
It's very simple, much simpler than the statutory residence test, if you like. If you spend more than 183 days in a calendar year, 1st January to 31st December in Spain, and it doesn't have to be consecutive, it's cumulative. So if you do a couple of months, January, February, say, or even 3 months, January, February, March, then you go back to the UK, and then you return for your summer holidays in July and August, you've already done 5 months in Spain, and if you pop back in November for another month, you've probably done your 183 days and de facto you have just become a resident of Spain for tax purposes. You may still be a resident of the UK for tax purposes at the same time, and it's at this critical point that the double tax treaty will come into play. Now, it isn't simply a matter of counting days in Spain either. If, and this is a technical definition, it has a fairly complex number of words to accompany it, but if your centre of vital interests, where your family live, where you do your work, where your main activities take place, if that centre of vital interest is Spain, regardless of the number of days you spend in Spain, you can be considered a resident of Spain for tax purposes. So you need to be very careful. And that's why it's important to follow that flowchart on statutory residence, to sit down and talk with a Blevins Ranked partner or senior partner or one of our tax experts to make sure that the juxtaposition of your residence of Spain, let's say, and its relationship to your tax affairs in the UK are properly balanced, so you only fall liable to tax in one jurisdiction or the other, and indeed that you can take advice about how you can mitigate the taxes that are likely to be paid by you in either jurisdiction.
Yeah. So what happens if you arrive or leave partway through the year in Spain?
It's essential that you count the number of days that you spend in Spain. As I said to you, the 183 days that you can spend in Spain is a cumulative total, not a consecutive total. So lots of people think, well, I was only here for 5.5 months and I then went back to the UK. Then they pop back to Spain for a month in the chilly month of November and suddenly find, without realising it, and we talked last week about, do many people make mistakes in this regard? This is one of the common ones, that you then trip over the 183 days thinking that having split the days up, you really haven't trespassed into Spanish tax residence. That's wrong. If you've accumulated more than 183 days in a calendar in Spain, you're a tax resident.
Mm-hmm. And what happens if you meet the criteria for both Spain and the UK?
It's not as uncommon as it might sound. I think that probably nearly, I would say 40%, maybe even 50% of the individuals that we meet in business do have tax implications in the UK, whether it's a pension or rental income or a property. Whatever it happens to be, if they become a resident of Spain, then they can still be liable to tax on the same income in both jurisdictions. And so there is a sort of a tiebreaker called the double tax treaty. What happens then is that the double tax treaty determines where that source of income is actually liable to tax. So if it was, say, rental income on a rented domestic property in the UK, that is chargeable as income arising in the UK to UK tax. You then have to report that income in Spain as part of your gross income. You are allowed to get a credit for the tax you pay to the UK. And if there's a supplement payable by reference to Spanish rates of tax, you would have to pay a supplement on that income in Spain. Sadly, if the tax rate in Spain charged a smaller amount of tax than was paid in the UK, as you probably appreciate, you don't get a refund. So it's quite important to get that understanding of where your tax is payable, on what income, and make sure that you don't. Because a lot of people, you know, Howard, the most common mistake, I think, is that people, for example, with a pension, find that the pension has had tax deducted at source in the UK, which is a nonsense. It should never really happen, because if you take the right advice, it should be paid to you gross, except in certain circumstances. But a lot of people think, having paid the tax on their pension in the UK, they don't have a liability in the place in which they now live. That is completely wrong. If you're a resident of Spain, you're taxable on your worldwide income, including your pension. And if you pay tax in the UK, yes, you will eventually get a credit, but you may end up finding you've got to pay a surplus amount to the Spanish tax authority.
Yeah. How strict are the Spanish authorities when it comes to tax residents?
Well, Howard, you and I do go back, probably keep mentioning this, but, you know, 30 years ago, Howard, cheques issued El Portador and cash transactions were de rigueur. And I'm sure that cash transactions still go on. And probably in fairly substantial measure. But the difference is that the tax authority in Spain 30 years ago seemed almost reluctant to chase people for a sort of taxes that were actually due from people. That isn't the case anymore. And the watershed was really the economic collapse back in 2008, when it was pretty obvious that Spain needed to shake itself up, and the EU have been pressing them to become more efficient in tax collection. And they have become much more aggressive. The introduction of Modelo 720, wanting a declaration of your worldwide assets, has meant, for example, that individuals now have to declare all of their assets, wherever they might be, not necessarily so that more tax is collected, but so the Spanish tax authority can track your assets and the value of them, so that if you do dispose of them or get an income from them, they are aware of what you own already.
Yeah. And how can people get in touch with Living Franks when they want to have a look about their tax residency?
I think, look, it's a very complex subject, and it's complex. Most people seem to treat it with scant regard. I think if you were to contact the local Blevins Franks office, the telephone numbers and the office addresses are on the website at www.blevinsfranks.com. Any one of the partners or the tax experts that are qualified and regulated advisors, if they can give you advice to put you in a position where you're not vulnerable to a mistake that ends up costing you tax or an investigation into your circumstances, it would have been a meeting very well. It may also be that if they're looking at your affairs, they can suggest a number of ways in which you can mitigate against the worst impact of the taxation in both jurisdictions. It's always worth a call, worth a meeting. Until you've had that meeting, you won't really know whether you're paying more tax than you should or not. I would say that 90% of the individuals we meet in business end up paying less tax as a result of being a client of Blevins Franks.
Many thanks, Bill. We'll talk again at the same time next week.
Thanks a lot, Howard. Take care.